Landlords here on the First Coast under fire in a series of real estate fights. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this morning, a closer look at some heated disputes in neighborhoods all across the city. We want your calls. It's 549-2937. Then later, local club Menonac celebrates a century of service. But first this morning, a series of landlord disputes in different neighborhoods all across town has communities across this region either up in arms or at the very least confused about what's going on. Whether it's a new wrinkle in the effort to replace a grocery store in the Gateway Town Center, the closing of a much-loved bowling alley at the beach, or a fight over a popular pool hall in Murray Hill. There's a lot of rumbling and discontent right now when it comes to the local commercial real estate world. Tim Gibbons, editor-in-chief of the Jacksonville Business Journal, has been following all of these flaps, and he joins us now for a closer look. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. Are you following these real estate disputes? We want to hear from you if you're in the Gateway area, Murray Hill, the beach. These have to do with different businesses that are either closed or in limbo due to fights with their landlords. Call us up, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at wjct.org and tweets to at Melissa in Jax. Our Facebook page is open too. All right, Tim, let's begin with the biggest issue we've been following. As Publix announced it was pulling out of the Gateway Town Center on the north side recently, there was much hue and cry and worry about Publix's decision leaving that area a food desert. Then we learned another grocery chain, Rose, decided they would go into that location. Now they're pulling out because they couldn't come to terms with the landlord. What's happening?
So you have a bunch of different things going on. And the three different cases that you mentioned, the bowling center, the billiard hall, and the supermarket, they're all probably idiosyncratic in some way. I mean, there's not like one landlord at play or one particular situation. But it is a kind of, as a meta story, is this issue of tenants and landlords not being able to come to agreement. The Publix thing obviously had people up in arms. People feel very strongly about their supermarkets. And when one closes down, that does tend to make people irate, particularly in this case where there was a feeling that it was there for years, it was functioning, it was doing well. And then Publix basically said they just couldn't survive at that location. And in some ways, Rose answer kind of says the same thing, that with the level of rent being charged, they didn't think they could make enough money to make it a viable business.
So the landlord, in effect, is charging a rent that Rose says is just too bleep high.
Yes, going back to the...
to reference the best-selling book, the rent is too bleep high. Okay, so is it too high?
Well, and that's always an interesting question. As a business reporter, it's interesting when you talk to people about what should rent be, because there is no natural level. I mean, is it too high? Not if you're a landlord trying to profit on a property that you invested money in and you've built up over the years, and people buy property, they invest in property for a long-term thing. One of the interesting things, and it's one of those things you have to keep in mind when you're writing about business, that everything is good or bad depending on how you approach it. Somebody loses money, that means somebody's making money. In some ways, rising rents is exactly what Jacksonville needs to help the city develop. One of the issues when you look at downtown, everybody talks about trying to make downtown better. One of the reasons we don't see more new construction downtown is because the rents are not too dang high, that it's not worth doing new construction for the amount of rents they can bring in. So in some ways, rising rents is a sign of growth.
It's a complicated picture as we talk with Tim Gibbons about all of these bitter real estate disputes going on now across the city. Right now we're talking about the food desert on the north side, as another grocery says it will not move into the former public space at Gateway Town Center. 549-2937. Call us up. No comment from the owner of Gateway and the landlord. It's Gator Investments LLC. So they're not responding to the concern about this.
They're not. And it's an interesting question that I don't think anybody in the local media has answered yet as to why they're playing such hardball. I've been writing about, actually writing about Gateway Center was the first story I did when I came to Jacksonville, all these many years ago. It's not exactly what one would point to as a functioning, you know, happening place to be. In some ways, Publix was the main draw for that center. You know, your listeners might remember the supervisor of elections used to have an office, you know, in that area that brought people there. But it's not a flourishing area. And there are those who would say it might be a place where if you're Rose, if you're looking to go in there, that it's not a place to that one would expect to pay premium rent.
Okay, let's move on to another one that we're following. The owners of Beach Bowl, a historic Jacksonville Beach Bowling Alley, shut down recently after more than 50 years of operation. And there's been an automated message letting folks know the good times have stopped rolling.
But you got to appreciate the slight sense of humor there and coming up with that. It can't be an easy time for them. And that, you know, good play on words.
Frequent customers at the beach are heartbroken. And the decision to close the doors at Beach Bowl stems apparently from a 3-year battle over the lease. This according to the owners. So once again, another dispute with a landlord.
And this is a problem, as any of our listeners who own their businesses are well aware of, the challenge of leasing space, that it's not yours. It feels like yours. People think it's yours. You know, if you've been operating a business for 50 years, people kind of assume that you're never going away unless the business itself fails. But it's not your property. Now, this, again, there are some commonalities among all these stories, but obviously each one is its own thing. And the issue here of the landlord and the tenant fighting, they went to court. The court decided what they should pay in rent, which was somewhere between what the landlord had been asking and what the tenants wanted to pay. If I recall correctly, the tenants kept on paying the lower, earlier contract that they had, kept on paying that amount, which led to this back rent. Now, to get back to my earlier point, though, about that issue of a sign of growth, you know, we're all aware of the fight to develop things in the beaches area. And if you live at the beaches and you love, you know, going to this bowling place, there's a certain amount of the challenge of people who want to build new things at the beaches are having trouble doing so. One can simply look at supply and demand and say, if there was more commercial space, there would, you know, it would give tenants a little more leverage. But at this moment, landlords, particularly in the beaches, have all the leverage because, you know, they're not making any more space.
I think that's why there's upset. This perception that landlords are using their leverage unfairly on these tenants, these small business owners who are just trying to get by and provide a decent business to the community. That's upsetting some folks. Let's talk about another issue that has cropped up. This is in Murray Hill. The owners of Perfect Rack Billiards, this is a pool hall in that community, they had to close their kitchen Sunday after a fight over the property line. Slayman Enterprises put a fence up in order to impede access to this business's property. This is a complicated one, too. But again, it comes down to the tenant and the landlord fighting and customers being deprived of access to the business.
This one's even more challenging because it's not so much landlord-tenant. My understanding is Slayman doesn't actually own the property of the billiard hall, but obviously owns one of the adjacent properties. This is a Murray Hill where it's not like one joint strip mall. These are individual buildings, and the issue becomes in the past the truck that would pick up the dumpsters for the billiard hall basically was able to come in through the back, and because of the placement of the fences, that stops people from walking through the somewhat shared parking lots of the three establishments in a row there. They've been fenced off, so now the truck can't come in to pick up the dumpster and deal with grease traps. It's particularly challenging for this particular restaurant because they have gotten a liquor license that requires them to sell 51% of their revenue in food. Without a dumpster, you can't sell that much food.
So why is Slayman Enterprises doing this? We haven't heard from Tony Slayman yet.
So their argument has been that they're basically trying to protect their property. What you have is a situation where you have the billiard hall, Next door, you have a combination vape shop kind of speakeasy bar, which is actually a fairly cool bar, if I can put in some a little personal opinion there. Mm-hmm. And then you have the property owned by Slamon, and you have people who are basically walking through the shared parking lot, which isn't a shared parking lot. It's each individual parking lot, but no barrier between them. So you end up with, if you're a business owner, you can credibly say, I don't want people walking on my property to go to someone else's business. They're walking past my customers' cars. You know, there's concern about safety and welfare. Now, what one could hope for is that some small business owners who are, you know, kind of all in a row there could come together and reach an agreement. This does seem to be a case of people playing hardball.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about a series of tenant-landlord disputes across town. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Do you think landlords have too much power? As some community residents say, they could sometimes abuse their leverage, forcing out small tenants or making it really hard for them to even open a business. Let's talk about that. Why do some of these landlords who hold lots of properties all across this community, Tim, you see the vacant signs in neighborhoods across town, why do they let the spaces sit empty for so long when they could negotiate with a prospective tenant and activate the space? You hear this over and over again from people who are trying to start a small business and they have trouble with the big commercial real estate landlords in the community.
Right. I was at a Porch Fest this weekend, and for anybody who's been to Springfield recently, the development on Main Street now is just tremendous. But for years, many of those properties just sat vacant. And those who tried to go into them would complain about that they could not come to terms with a landlord. The irony is, in some ways, the first part of the things that we were talking about feed into this question. One of the things that landlords take into account is, I can't get the rent I want for this property right now. If I lease it to somebody at a lower rent, 5 years from now, I'm going to jack the rent, and then everyone's going to hate me for kicking this tenant out. So there's a certain challenge there of, if you own the property, you know, there's various reasons to keep it vacant, the tax reasons and you know, not having to do tenant build out and just the property itself. So you end up with, it's actually more valuable for a landlord to own the property, keep it vacant until rents rise to a level where they can just charge somebody the higher rents, with, of course, the chicken and egg issue there. If they're keeping the properties vacant, how do they get up to that level?
Right. Let me ask you as well. Politicians typically will say small business is the backbone of the American
economy.
I've heard
it a million times.
Small business, small business. But is this city leadership really standing by small business owners when they get into these disputes? The perception certainly is that they tend to side more with the big land owners, the big commercial real estate property owners. Here's a tweet from Michael. We need to have a vacancy tax. In other words, tax the landlords when they keep the properties vacant.
I can't remember the name of the English political theorist from centuries ago who basically, Bentham tax, I think it was, who basically proposed that rather than an income tax, that you tax property itself. And there is that idea of trying to force development to happen, that making it less worthwhile. You know, right now, if you have a vacant property, it is valued for tax purposes as less than a operating property. So the idea that you have some amount of an incentive to not put something in there unless you're making a certain amount of money. So I'm not advocating for this, but I can understand the frustration that people have that incentivizing landlords to do something. Now, you do have things like the Downtown Investment Authority, who is embarking on a concentrated push to have more retail downtown. And in some ways, those conversations do take place with the DIA trying to be an intermediary between landlords and tenants, and sometimes putting in public money to make that happen.
Mm. Let's go to your calls. What are your thoughts about frustration with landlords across this community as we're looking at several different disputes, the closing of Beach Bowl, issues at Perfect Rack in Murray Hill, the Gateway Town Center grocery store, and there are others too. Those are just the three we've been talking about today. 549-2937, give us a call. Haley is in Avondale. Hi, Haley, good morning.
Hi, good morning. my comment is just that, you know, I've seen plenty of long-loved establishments, local establishments go out of business here, especially as Jacksonville has picked up a little bit and downtown's getting a little bit more attractive, at least it seems to me. And I understand that Blue Cross Blue Shield is getting, you know, millions of dollars from the city to stay put, stay where they are, to again, bring that attention to downtown. But what about all the people that have been there? You know, what is the city, does they have a clear-cut policy as far as, you know, only investing and giving money to large corporations and existing or a new business coming downtown, as opposed to, you know, helping out people who have already been there and who already have a customer base? And thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Haley.
That is a great question and an interesting one. So there's a couple of different things to unpack there. One is the question of incentives, which if you talk to local business owners, the longtime complaint has been that the city will shell out bags and bags of money for people coming from outside the area, but won't do anything to help companies that are already here.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to some people in recent weeks after the announcement that the city would be giving a lot of money to Florida Blue, FIS, that entire kind of Brooklyn cluster of companies, would be giving money to help them expand parking and do headquarters development. And there is a little bit of a, they were going to do it anyhow. They're already here. Why do they need a bunch of city money? In some ways, and God forbid that I ever show any sympathy for the city, but there is a you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of thing of if you don't help local people, you get the, oh, you're just bringing people in. When you do, it's a sense of, well, they were here. What do they need the money?
Okay. And so here's a comment on our Facebook page referencing Slayman Enterprises owner Tony Slayman. Nick writes, he's Slime Man. That's kind of a tough thing, a tough
slur. I'm sure
slur.
He has heard that a lot.
I'm sure he's heard it before. Yes. But to be clear, we haven't gotten a comment from Slayman Enterprises about the dispute in Murray Hill. But
this is not defending him at all in this particular case, but simply for contextual purposes, you know, do keep in mind he is one of the largest retail, particularly landowners in the area. So there's a certain amount of whatever your feelings are on landlords, they're going to be writ large for Tony Slayman just because he is, you know, mm-hmm. he's a big landlord.
Yeah, sure. It's 549-2937 to join us. So these are all in the process of working their way through whatever court action or mediation is needed, but it's not a new story. How do you see, as the city continues to grow, Tim, how do you see this issue perking along?
Hopefully, and this is, I say, God forbid I praise the city, God forbid I'm optimistic, but there's, the hope is that it's a cyclical sort of thing, that we are at a point where we are growing and that these are basically growing pains, that you know, if there is a little more development allowed at the beaches, if Murray Hill, which has been on a huge upswing, if they keep on going on this upswing, that there will be more development and there will be, not that rents will plummet or anything, but that you end up with more property or you have people looking outside those areas. I mean, you look at Five Points, which, you know, rents have gone up tremendously. Okay, so now that pushed people into Murray Hill. So hopefully this is a cyclical sort of thing that either spurs more development or spurs people to look elsewhere, kind of helping the entire city grow.
I was speaking the other day with a business owner on Main Street in Springfield who shared with me that they felt they could have opened their really successful business much earlier than they did if the landlord had not been so difficult to deal with.
Well, and maybe that should be the takeaway of this conversation for the landlords listening, is to realize that they have a role to play in developing the city, and that maybe a little more partnership thinking would be in order.
And what advice would you have to small business owners who are trying to deal with a major landlord? What should they do? How should they suit up for these kinds of battles?
I wish I had an answer to that, but talking to a lot of small business owners, that's a perennial complaint. Obviously, it's not everywhere. There's lots of great landlords. And in some ways, it's simply knowing what you're going into. Anybody who engages or is involved with the development activity in Jacksonville knows the reputation of different landlords. And maybe it's simply a forewarned is forearmed sort of thing, of that knowing when you're going into it, there are landlords who are known for working closely with their tenants, and there are those who are known for striking a much harder bargain, and just knowing what you're getting into might be helpful.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about this with Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Let's take one more call before we go to the break. It's Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. I know you're still getting in the queue, but I want to get you on. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, ma'am. What I was told about Perfect Rec was that Sliman actually wants to buy that building, and this is just part of his tactics to make that happen.
Okay, thanks for that. The Perfect Rack billiards place
billiard
in Murray
Hall.
Hill.
And
what about that?
It's a rumor that's going around. I mean, I can't speak at all to the veracity of it. Obviously, anytime you have a dispute of this sort, it could be seen as hardball, putting the owner behind the eight ball, so to speak. Nothing.
No pun intended.
Yeah, it was. It might be playing hardball with the owner to try to squeeze them out. Again, though, it's a rumor, and
I'll tell you, it's why you often hear folks that go into a small business, why it's so important for many of them to own the building that they have their business in.
Although in this case, Perfect Rec does.
And so that's the thing. They actually do own the building and yet even still are in this dispute. Yep. So it's really remarkable. And so we always appreciate your insights. Tim Gibbons is the editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more still to come. Menonek is celebrating a century of service. We'll speak with that club's leadership. And also, our book club asks a question. What would you do with a second chance? We'll be right back.
WJCT's Oddball podcast is getting national buzz, like this shout out on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast.
What is making me happy this week is a new podcast that I discovered via NPR One. It is a podcast called Oddball.
That's Linda Holmes.
It's fun. It's entertaining.
Or maybe you use Apple Podcasts and saw Oddball featured first on the new and noteworthy list, or you saw it on Stitcher's What's Hot list. Check it out at oddballpodcast.com.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the legacy of Fred Rogers with the 17th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT, all Vistar Credit Union branches, Sedith Moving and Logistics, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, visit wjct.org/events. Contributions will be donated to area nonprofit organizations.
This book club segment is underwritten by San Marco Books and More.
Welcome back. Well, what do you do when, after going through a dramatic experience, you get a second chance in life? Author Leif Anger explores that idea of starting over, which so many of us think about. Stacey Goldring is here with this month's First Coast Connect book club selection. It's called Virgil Wander. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for being here. So why are we reading Virgil Wander this month?
Because our lives have wandered together, so now you're stuck with me.
Nice.
We are reading Virgil Wander because, you know, I'm always going to bring you the different and interesting. And Virgil Wander is the story of a man named Virgil Wander. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Virgil goes back to the Aeneid, and Virgil wrote a story about someone who had to go ahead. His name was Aeneas, and he had to face certain challenges in order to fulfill his destiny. And he eventually is the founder of Rome through Romulus and Remus. So we have Virgil, who is living in Minnesota and by accident takes a wrong turn and goes into Lake Superior and should by all accounts have died. But he gets a second chance on life. So what do we do with that second chance?
Interesting.
What do we do?
And this is a book about making a comeback.
Yes.
Dealing with loss and letting go of the past, which is so hard for so many of us.
And such a universal, right? So in this case, like last month, we talked about There, There, and that was a book about the American experience. And this is too. This brings us to the Midwest. And little did I know that a lot of people don't know about us crazies up there. And this is about a town who has fallen on hard times. They've lost their major manufacturer. And all, are you ready? 62 characters. 62.
That's a lot of characters.
Yes. But they're all flawed, like everyone else, and they're all dealing with some type of loss. And in this book, we see how people either, and this is universal too, when we have something devastating happen in our lives, we have a choice, right? We can either let that be the governor and the excuse for not moving forward, or we can leave it behind and we can start over.
So in that sense, a terrible experience is almost a gift in a way.
Exactly. Exactly. And we know people like that. And people who have read this book, it's affected them deeply in ways that if you have not experienced these types of things, you don't know. But if you have experienced them, then you can now relate. And what also is beautiful about this book, it's the perfect gift if you are a book lover. Because this man, Leif Enger, clearly scored very high on the vocab portion of his GRE. I stopped looking up words after a while, but his way of dealing with language, because Virgil, when he recovers, has lost certain parts of his vocabulary. But eventually, through the novel, certain words start to reappear, and he welcomes them back and tells us, oh, look, decaffeinated showed up. You know, so there's beautiful things like that, that he does that. So as a reader, you're just tickled as a book lover or a lover of words when you hear these certain things. But it's also funny. He says things like, he had the hearting bulk of an aging athlete defeated by pastry.
We've all been defeated by pastry, haven't
or
we?
The evidence of my life lay before me, and I was unconvinced. You know, so it's these quips that although some reviewers had said the book is a little hallucinogenic because it kind of veers off and there is magical realism, it's still a book that grabs you because nothing major happens in this book. So if you're waiting for the big kaboom, it's not going to happen. But what happens because Virgil comes back and decides to let the albatross go and go forward with his life, is we start to see the beauty in the everyday. So when we walk out and the sun hits us in the eyeballs and we swat it away like a fly, all of a sudden we realize how humorous and beautiful life is when, you know, we do that. We're like, the sun. And he brings the mundane into the magnificent. That's what, I just thought of that. That's what Enger does with this book. And he says things like, memory's oldest trick is convincing us of its accuracy.
Well, our memories aren't always accurate,
are they? No, and technically, we rebuild every memory every time we go back to it. So it's never, ever the same memory twice. And I really was bummed when I heard that. But that's really the honest to God truth.
Now, Stacy says the book Virgil Wander, it's our book club pick this month, is sort of like a combination of Twin Peaks meets Lake Wobegon meets the Andy Griffith Show meets Empire Falls. So if that gives you a little bit of an idea of what this book is about, I hope those are helpful cues. And again, this is a book set in the Midwest, which, by the way, is in a deep freeze right now. Mm-hmm. So if you have Midwestern roots, you might enjoy Virgil Wander. And so how have your book club audiences responded to this?
Well, the first thing they say is, where did you find this? And, you know, we can't reveal our secrets or we'd have to kill everybody. So we're not going to tell them how. But the second is anyone who has ever been hospitalized or has had a great loss has said this or has come back from like a concussion or anything like that. They say this book nails it. For others who say, you know, I've never been to the Midwest. I thought the Midwest was Fargo, you know, the film Fargo. Mm-hmm. This opens up a whole nother idea of the beauty of the small town. You know, everyone wants to live in New York City, London, and Paris, and Mumbai, and all these great, exciting places. But it's the idea of community, and it's the idea, it's friendships, it's community that is everlasting, and that's what binds us. That is so profound in this book. If you are lonely and you read this book, you will then be willing, how can I put this? You will then be willing to take the risk to connect with another. The book is that type of inspiring. And did I mention kites? Okay, so like 10 seconds about kites. There is a magical character in this book named Rune. Okay, so if you love any author who names his characters like a little wink nod, this book is full of that. So Rune shows up, and here's a man who's flying kites on the edge of Lake Superior, and he gives people a chance to hold the kite. And when people feel the kite, each of these characters, you know, everyone from their own Barney Fife to, you know, Aunt Bee, whatever, when they feel that kite and they feel that pull, it's uplifting, it's cleansing, it connects them with a higher power, it allows them to feel reborn. So there's a beautiful theme that runs throughout the book of second chances, of resurrection, of what I call the 2.0 that everyone is searching for in life. And we can leave all that other stuff behind. You leave the regret behind. It's so beautiful, these kites. And our author, of course, you have to write about what you know. Our author loves to fly kites.
Wow. I think everyone listening right now can hear the excitement and passion Stacy has for great literature.
I'm actually a little overheated.
I am. Which is why she is such a fantastic book club leader and so in demand across this community. Now, her pick this month on the show is Virgil Wander by author Leif Anger. So pick it up. It's, as she said, it's a book lover's book, a perfect gift. Speaking of your book club, we want to make a brief mention of your underwriter on this segment, San Marco Books and More. There has been a fire at a business near the mm-hmm. bookstore. And so because of that, you can't have your physical book club meeting
this month,
right. Which is too bad.
Yeah, we'll pick it up next month. But people, you know, Black Friday is coming up in the holiday season, and we're so worried about all of our local merchants, and we want them to do well. I know you can still shop online at San Marco Books and More. I don't know when all the stores are going to be opening, the Wardroom, the Right Touch, etc. We hope they come back soon. We're just so grateful everyone is A-okay. Mm-hmm. And again, the community has reached out with open arms, put me to work, let me know what you want to do. And it almost has been a reflection of the book. So you know what? San Marco Books and More and San Marco Square, they will also have their 2.0.
There you go. And you can always email Stacy with ideas about book selections and questions at bookclub@wjct.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. Well, it is a major milestone for this city's Mennonac Club. Mennonac, which used to be called Men in Action, has served the First Coast for 100 years. They've raised millions of dollars for charities, scholarships, and other programs, and their motto is to provide help where none is available. Mennonac is celebrating its century of service this week. We're pleased to welcome Club President Carrie Varconda and past president Diana Fanning. Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Carrie, let's start with you. Back in 1919, a couple of dozen men met at the old Seminole Hotel in downtown Jacksonville, which is now the site of Sweet Pete's.
Right.
And decided to form a club. So that's how it all began, right?
Yes, a group of concerned business leaders, civic leaders got together and wanted to provide service collectively to help meet the needs of the city of Jacksonville, particularly focused on youth, and decided to form an organization to do just that. And so they formed what was called at that time a Kiwanis Club and later became Mennonac. And here we are today, $1.5 million worth of charity grants we've given out, $575,000 in college scholarship scholarships to local students, and untold hours of mentoring with scouting and big brothers and big sisters and Take Stock in Children, and then a lot of work of teaching financial literacy with junior achievement in some Title I local elementary schools.
You've done amazing work across the community over the last 100 years. And Diana Fanning, let's also talk about the fact that women are now a big part of this club called Mennonac. It's short for Men in Action, isn't it? Women didn't join till 1990, is that right?
That is correct. And now we have a great group of women, all different types of professions, walks of life, different parts of the city coming together. And that's just one of the wonderful things about Mennonac. And I encourage people who are coming to Jacksonville. I'm a native, but I know that it's a melting pot. And there's a lot of people that move to Jacksonville and they want to connect. This is a great spot to check out. I recently was talking with a young professional who is a single mother, and she's been in Jacksonville for a few years, and she was talking about wanting to get involved in the community. And so I started talking to her about different organizations, and she goes, "How do you know all this?" And I said, "Because I'm part of the Mennonac Club of Jacksonville, and we have the opportunity each week to hear about different things going on in our community." And since then, I've been able to connect her with a group, and she's off and running. And that's just the things that occur in Mennonac each and every week on Mondays when we meet for lunch.
That's right. It's a weekly club meeting. I've been to several Mennonac gatherings over the years. By the way, great lunch. It's always
great
really
lunch.
Good. But even more important than that is what happens at the lunch and the networking and the focus of what you're doing. Why do you think it's lasted 100 years?
I think it's because people need, we have forever pretty much, needed connections. And Stacy talked about that a little earlier and how the small town environment of feeling like you have a place where you connect and you're kind of removes you from it takes you away from isolation. It gets you connected to people in a meaningful way. And so Mennonac has been doing that for all this time. The best way to build a relationship with another person is to spend time with them in service and do something for something that I remind myself how helpful it is to me to serve side by side with other people because it takes my mind off myself.
That's right.
And giving to others is what Mennonac's about.
Now, the major planks in Mennonac's giving platform are annual charity grants and college scholarships. Each year, one charity gets $40,000 for a capital improvement project. And it's my understanding sometimes a nonprofit will apply several times before they might get that coveted Mennonac grant.
Sure. We have actually a great example recently was Hope at Hand, which is on Atlantic Boulevard. They provide a means for students, middle and high school students, to express themselves through poetry and creativity, to sort of be able to express the things they're struggling with. And these are young people who have had trouble with domestic violence or perhaps incarceration, and they've just had a rough go of it. And so the work that Stephanie Fletcher does with Hope at Hand helps those students. And the funding we gave them, they applied three times, finally got it the third time around. And that funding created a wonderful meeting space for those folks.
And college scholarships, Diana, as well. People might not realize their kids might be eligible for a scholarship through Mennonac.
Absolutely. We work with Leadership Jacks, and they provide us with students from all over the city that are wanting to move forward and move on to college. And so they're able to apply for a $5,000 college scholarship.
Right. That's not nothing.
No, that's a that's a big deal.
Okay, so as you look ahead to the next 100 years, how do you see Mennonat continuing to evolve in this community?
One of the things that we started this year with the help of Karen Mathis as a moderator, we have a number of tenured members that have great, amazing community experiences and history. But our lunches are a good opportunity to spend some time together and network a bit, but mostly we're there for the program, which is to learn from those speakers. So we've set up something called Fireside Chats, and our younger members, a small handful, 12 or 14, get to spend an evening with someone like Hickory Fant, who people know from the banking community, Preston Haskell, founder of the Haskell Corporation, J.F. Bryan, who helped start the scholarship program at Mennonat, in fact, and spend time getting to know them a little better. So we spend a couple hours with Karen helping the conversation so we get to know each other better. Mm-hmm. And that's a way for tenured members of the organization to help our younger members to learn a few things that they've learned along the way. And mm-hmm. this coming year, we'll be doing other members, including Jane Lanier, who's a longtime member. And we have some great folks that have much to teach.
Very nice. Yeah, that's excellent to hear the different generations connecting at this club. So with all of that said, you're having a big bash Thursday night to celebrate your centennial. What's happening?
We are going to gather at the Haskell Building on Thursday evening. We'll have we have an auction, online auction right now. Listeners can go to mennonat.org to learn about that and some fascinating items there for bidding. We're looking to raise all those funds for that. We'll go to the Mennonat Foundation for the scholarships and a charity grant. And that evening, we'll get together. We have a few special guests that will be speaking that have a long history and personal connection with Mennonat. And we'll finish up the auction, and we'll celebrate and have a toast by Preston Haskell, longtime member. He'll give the final toast. And we're going to have a really fun time remembering what we've done and looking ahead.
Are you going to sing the song? When I've been to the lunches, you guys always sing a special song, and they even put the lyrics of the song on the table so everyone can sing along.
We do have a special special presentation of the song is planned for the evening.
I can't remember all of it, but it celebrates Mennonat, so it really is a unique civic presence in this community. To RSVP for Thursday night, go to mennonat.org. That's mennonak.org. Check out the online auction fundraiser, too, because this helps Mennonat support nonprofits and students all across this community. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on the centennial. Really cool.
Thank you very much for having us.
We were joined by Carrie Varkanda, president, the Mennonat Club of Jacksonville, and past president, Diana Fanning. Again, that website is M-E-N-I-N-A-K, mennonat.org. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but up next, some cocktails for a cause. How you can be part of Margarita Jayville this week. And we've got a ticket giveaway, so keep listening for that. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Grammy-winning violinist James Ennis has been called ferociously virtuosic. I'm Courtney Lewis. You'll hear that virtuosity when Ennis joins the symphony and me for Edward Elgar's beautiful violin concerto on November 15th and 16th. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Did you know Bakersfield, California is known as Nashville West? A new box set documents the city's country music legacy.
These were hardworking people. They worked in oil fields. They worked picking crops. At the end of the week, they wanted to blow off steam.
The Bakersfield Sound. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on The World, nearly 700,000 undocumented young people will watch closely to see if the Supreme Court lets the Trump administration end the DACA program. Some people with DACA, like this data analyst and her husband, have resettled in Canada.
If we had had a chance, the opportunity to stay, we would have stayed. We didn't want to leave the United States.
Uncertainty over DACA divides families on The World.
This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The impeachment inquiry is about to go public. House Republicans are gearing up for a blockbuster showdown with Democrats, and the world will be watching. Can one side connect the dots? Can the other put distance between the president and any wrongdoing? Impeachment 101, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Big Brothers Big Sisters is America's oldest, largest, and most impactful mentoring program. Dozens of kids right here in our area need a mentor right now, especially boys. Sarah Alford is CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida. She's here now with more about that and how you can also be part of some cocktails for this great cause. Hey, Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. You know, I can't say enough good things about Big Brothers Big Sisters. You do amazing work, and you're always looking to find more mentors, what you call a big, right?
Absolutely.
Especially men.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of programs here in Northeast Florida where we're impacting change, one Big Brother, one little brother, one big sister, one little sister at a time. And we do hold a wait list for youth who are eager and wanting a mentor in their life. Right now, we have close to 100 youth on our wait list, although arguably we could have way more. And about 90% of those are young men in particular. So we're always on the hunt for big brothers.
Okay, so if someone's interested in volunteering, what can they expect?
So I think the thing that's great about Big Brothers Big Sisters is how we're a partner in the whole experience. And we're really about a long-term experience. So we'll train you. We help make sure we understand exactly what you're hoping to get out of the mentoring experience. If you want to be a tutor, we have a school-based mentoring program. If you want to take a youth out and learn how to play football, we have a community-based program for that. We even have our program that's workforce development and helping youth find vision for themselves in the companies in our community. And so we'll walk you through all of that. We will find a youth for you. There's so much more we do to match. It's not the first man gets the boy waiting the longest. It's really about layers of compatibility because we want you guys to be fast friends and lifelong friends for each other.
And it's not really a huge time commitment, is it? You just spend a little time each month with a kid or a teenager who needs a really positive adult role model.
Absolutely. So our programs average about 4 hours a month, depending on the different models that you're in. Sometimes that's one long sitting together. Sometimes that's an hour a week. It really depends. And then the great thing is we have a match support specialist who is there to navigate the whole experience with you. So they really help you connect, communicate, problem solve, and wrap around services because we know sometimes things beyond mentoring are needed for the youth in our community. And so we have resources to help our mentors identify those things and link youth up with that stuff as well.
And your program is the most successful in the country. Why do you think that is?
I really think it's because we create this huge community around mentoring. So mentoring, I think, is probably a hard word because it makes it sound like you have to have all the answers and you have to know how to do it just right. But really, we're talking about creating lifelong friendships. And so On average, our mentoring relationships are years long, but I hear stories every day. We're 105 here in Jacksonville, so I hear stories
every day. You're even older than
Mennonac. I know. I'm so excited for their centennial celebration as well. But you hear stories every day about people who are in their 50s and 60s who talk about their mentor and how they're still connected. They have lunch once a month, you know, different things like that. And it's really incredible. And I think that's why, right? Because we understand it's not a fast, quick solution. It's really about creating a long-term system for support. And so it's helping youth who might not have social capital to get access to areas of influence or just opportunities through exposure. And it's really about igniting potential that we already know exists in our kiddos. It's just helping bring that out and helping it bloom and blossom. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. And that's why we're so successful.
One caring adult with a small investment can make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
It really does make such a difference for kids. So consider becoming big, as they say, mm-hmm. with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida, especially the guys out there. They really, really need male volunteers. So if you're listening and you're a man and you've thought about this, give them a call. And here is one way you can be part of it, just by going out and having some drinks. Tell us about Margarita Jayville.
So Margarita Jayville is our fall fundraiser, and it is incredible in that it brings the flair of Duval Street in the Keys to Duval County here.
Very nice.
In Jacksonville. And it's everything it sounds like. It's margaritas for a great cause. So we have some incredible support of Sauza, Jose Cuervo, Southern Glaciers, and Republic National. And we're bringing, you know, a lot of really great craft cocktails to Mavi Waterfront Bar and Grill in Jacksonville Beach.
At Beaches Marine,
at
right?
At Beaches Marine, okay. Yes. They're incredible partners out there, Tracy and Abram and their whole team. And for your ticket, you get all this limitless cocktails, some really incredible island-inspired and Keys-inspired food. And then we have an auction, we have a band, we have a lot of community time out together. And really, it helps us to raise money. Most of our programs are funded through grant opportunities, either through corporations, the city, the state. But this money really helps us to...
Helps you fund the program.
Fund the program,
so right now, we're very excited. We have one pair of tickets, one pair, to give away to Margarita Jayville, which is this Friday night at Beaches Marine. Email us right now. If you want that pair of tickets, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will put your name at will call. Get on out and support Big Brothers Big Sisters this Friday night at Margarita Jayville at Beaches Marine. Sarah Alford, CEO, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. News director here is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Tune in tomorrow for a conversation with JEA Executive Carrie Stewart. That's tomorrow. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll see you in the morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.